At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
My daddy was a brakeman on a highball traveling train. Mama, she raised four little children and her family had a good name. And Papa and Mama wanted...
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with Bob McGinn. It's been a long time since we've been here, Bob. It's been a real long time.
Like May 4 or 5, a few days after the draft, Mike?
Yeah, so we've had a couple months hiatus here, and it's been a decent summer. I had a good summer, did you?
Yes, we've been on holiday.
Yes, we've been on holiday, as the British would say. Mm-hmm. So, what was the highlight of your summer? It's got to be the Pro-Am. Tell us about the Pro-Am. You gushed about it for days.
I got a call hours before the American Family Pro-Am in Madison, the Senior Champions Tour event, to get on down to Madison to University Ridge and play in the Pro-Am with the rest of the JS crew. Our pro was Mike Springer, who won the 1994 Greater Milwaukee Open, GMO, Mike. That was the first year it was at Brown Deer Golf Club. And his caddy was John Wilson. And John played on the tour in like 91 and then 93 to 96. They couldn't have been nicer. They were fantastic. I mean, you know, John's 57, Springer's, I think, 51. You know, the days of being... I mean, they were just kind of like us. And they hit some great shots, and they told some wonderful stories, and it was really fun.
Now, in the interest of full disclosure, you were extremely nervous about this. You were very nervous. I was here the night before it happened, and you were unsure.
I had no, I had never seen the course. I wasn't playing real well at that point. I played 25 18s this summer, Mike. How many have you played?
Four, with four different sets of clubs in four different states.
You were renting, or borrowing all east.
Borrowing all over the place.
You and I played Mighty High Cliff down by Kimberly.
Yeah, the only time I used my own clubs all summer.
So I was a little worried, yeah, but these guys made it so much fun.
And you shot well.
I never lost it. Would have been too embarrassing to totally lose it in front of these guys, so... Hung in there.
And you had some golf rounds in the UP, as usual.
Yep. Went up to the beautiful UP a couple weeks ago for 3 days or so. Went one day over to the west side, played Mighty Oak Crest in Norway, and had dinner in Iron Mountain at the TNT in Aurora, Wisconsin, actually. Tremendous spaghetti. The next day we went to Marquette. We stayed at the great old restored hotel, the Landmark. Went over to Grand Marais, and on a scenic overlook at Lake Superior, we're at about 85 degrees. We're admiring Mighty Gitche Gumee, and there's a little something carved into the wooden guardrail. Loving my UP. No, loving the UP. Mm-hmm. And we did. And then we closed it out coming back through Manistique, and it was a good one. West, north, and east of Escanaba, the home ground.
But the 25 rounds of golf you got in, you know, that's one thing. But I've heard rumors that in the pool that matters with your son, Charlie, that you've been getting your butt kicked a little bit this year. Explain the pool to everyone and own your humiliation, Bob.
In very short terms, this is our fifth year of doing a major pool, majors only. The night before the major, we have a draft. And whoever won the previous major gets first pick. The next guy gets 2-3. The next guy gets 4-5. We go up to 50, 25 players for each. Missed cuts are minus 20 grand per player. Add up the guy's winnings at the end. Who wins the most? I won the first 4 years of this thing. I was in cruise control. and he has wiped me out in the first three majors, and I'm sure he's going to kick my butt in the PGA as well.
You got $10 off him, though. How'd you get the $10?
That was a side bet. Starting the year, the day before the Masters, he said that he took Day, Spieth, and McIlroy, and he bet $10 that they would win at least three majors. I took the field. They're not going to win any. Amazing, huh?
Could be true.
Yeah.
Could be
yeah.
true. So that was your summer.
What about your summer, Mike? What have you been up to?
I had a decent summer. I spent Memorial Day weekend in Chicago with my cousin who flew in from Connecticut. I saw Wrigley Field for the first time, which was really cool. Mm. We went to a soccer game out there to see the Chicago Fire, which was also pretty neat. What else did I do? I went to Philadelphia for a bachelor party. I was the best man in a wedding, and we'll get to that in a second. But the bachelor party was really fun. We built it around the United States national team playing a soccer game in Philadelphia against Paraguay in the Copa America tournament. So for us soccer nerds, that was a blast. You know, I'd never seen the U.S. national team play before in a competitive game. So that was great. And then the highlight of my summer was going home to Connecticut for about 2.5 weeks. I did a bunch of stuff while I was there. It was jam-packed. It was great. The reason I went home around that time was for the 4th of July. Every 4th of July, I go to my friend's beach house in Old Saybrook. We get all the guys together, and it's just a great weekend of lawn games and drinking and barbecue and all that kind of stuff, fireworks over the water on the Connecticut Sound there in Old Saybrook, Connecticut. And as I mentioned, I was the best man in a wedding. I hadn't been to a lot of weddings. I'd only been to two in my entire life up until this one. One was non-traditional, and the other one I was too young to really remember. So this experience was new for me. I was the best man to one of my buddies from high school who was on my soccer team. And I gave a speech, 5 minutes on the nose. I memorized it, and it went over pretty well. It was a lot of fun. And then I saw Paul McCartney, wow. which I had been dying to see. As many of you know who have listened to this a number of times, I speak effusively about the Beatles and my love for them. And so that was a real treasure for me to see Paul McCartney. I saw him in Philadelphia. We drove down, me and my buddies from Connecticut. He played 2 hours and 40 minutes at the age of 74, 73. It was great. It was terrific.
At Wells Fargo, where the Democrats are tonight?
No, it was outdoors at Citizens Bank Park, where the Phillies play.
Wow.
So it was an outdoor concert. It was jam-packed. I mean, the whole thing.
50,000 or something, yeah.
So basically what they did was they put the stage in center field, and then the seats in the very corners of the outfield, which would basically be, you know, even with the stage where you couldn't see, mm-hmm. those were roped off. But everything else was packed, and then there had to be an additional 10,000 seats on the grass.
So, where were you?
Oh, we were up, you know, probably above third base in the upper deck. So we didn't have a great view or anything. But just to be in a stadium with, you know, one of the Beatles for a couple hours is pretty neat.
Yeah.
And I've been playing in a soccer league here in Green Bay, a men's league. The season just finished up, actually. We played on Sunday afternoons. And you actually came out and watched one of the games in June. What'd you think, Bob?
Average age about 30, Mike, 32-ish?
Yeah, the overall range would be about 18 to 40, but average range I would say is between 29 and 33, somewhere in there.
It was about 85 that day, and I was trying to get some shade, and there was none, and the game was at high noon. Most of the players were ex-college guys, and it was really competitive. It was physical. There wasn't much loafing. I mean, guys played to exhaustion. Well, you lost 3-2?
2-1.
2-1, yeah. I really enjoyed it, Mike. It's a great sport.
It was a fun time. It was a fun time. So now our summers are over. We're back on the grind here, training camp being arguably the busiest time of the year.
The golf season is over.
We'll
see it next May.
And you've led us back into this podcast with a musical selection from Mr. John Anderson. Defend your choice, sir.
John, that's kind of a novelty song of John's. It was a tough call. With Black Sheep over Straight Tequila Night. It's on every jukebox in America. I saw John at the Norbert Hill Center out in Oneida about 12 years ago, Under the Stars. And he did a great job. And John's just kind of an old guy. Seminole Wind is another good song. And he's kind of a wild character. The Anderson Anthology.
Now, did you hear this song while driving to the UP? Is that what you told me, that you were making notes in the car?
At various points this summer, songs would come along. I'd jot it down, try not to crash the vehicle, and jot down something.
And that's how much you love the podcast. You're planning your musical selections months in advance, risking your life on the road just for these good people.
That's right. Yeah.
And so now we have to get to the football, which I know most of you are dreading, and I know you tune in just for our banter. But as usual, the season kicked off with Bob's position series, breaking down the team group by group, player by player. And how do you want to start off discussing them this season, Bob?
Well, let's go in the order that I always look at a football team. We'll start wide receiver, wide out, tight end, O-line, QB, RB, DL, LB, DB, and special teams. It's the exact same order every time I put anything down, all right?
Okay, so where are we with the wide receivers?
We're going to the wide receivers. It's all about Jordy Nelson, right?
Got to be.
So what happened to Jordy when he showed up here, Mike?
So Jordy, you know, tore his ACL last season during an exhibition game in Pittsburgh. He's about 11 months removed from tearing that ACL. Everyone presumed that he would, you know, be ready for the start of camp because progress reports on him throughout the last few months had been stupendous, really. And then he's on the PUP list. But it wasn't for the reason people expected. It wasn't for a little bit extra healing in that ACL. Instead, it was a little bit of an issue in his other knee. He claims it's not serious. He said that there was no surgical repair needed, but it was a little hiccup. That was his word. Should fans be concerned?
I have no idea.
Neither do I.
No comment. I don't know.
It's weird.
It's not great, but I don't think he was going to play any of these exhibition games anyway.
So you thought he'd go into the season playing zero snaps?
I thought a 50-50 shot of that, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Just, you know, 3-4 weeks of practice with Rodgers and just go play.
Now, your story about the receivers focused on really what they lost without him and what he can do, you know, schematically a little bit when he's back in here. You also looked at receivers for the Packers that had devastating injuries later in their career and how effective they were when they came back. So first, let's go through the injuries, and then if he comes back healthy, let's talk about what he does for the offense.
So the injuries, Sterling Sharp, they've had six number one. Nelson is the sixth clear-cut number one receiver since the Renaissance started in 92. Sterling Sharp was done at 29, cervical neck injury. Robert Brooks really blew out his knee in that fourth year, was never the same. He was done at 29. Antonio Freeman, his greatest year was his fourth year when he was like 26. He wasn't really injured. That didn't affect him, but he just kind of lost his stinger and really was not the same player at about age 27, 28. Javon Walker had a tremendous year. People often forget that in 04. He eclipsed Donald Driver as the top man. First game, opener Detroit in 05, torn ACL. Traded, kind of forced to trade. Ted Thompson traded him to Denver. He had one good year there. It was a bust the rest of the way, and in Oakland, he was done at out of the league. Driver, no injuries. He was a great player at Jordy's age, 31. He probably took more hits than anybody. Well, maybe Sharp, but Driver was tough as nails, and he was durable and resilient. Greg Jennings, he wasn't really hurt. Injuries did crop up in his fifth year, but, you know, he's done now. He just retired. He played 10 years. A couple years in Minnesota, he really wasn't that good a player at 31, certainly. So of the six, you got one great player at 31, Donald Driver. And Jordy's 31, he turned it in May. What can they get out of him, Mike?
You know, Jordy is one of those interesting guys because you hear across all levels of football that, you know, speedy receivers can take the top off a defense. And the easiest way to sort of explain that to people who don't really understand it or who aren't sure what that means is when a guy can run deep routes successfully and be a legitimate threat, the safeties have to hang back a little bit and the corners are pulled back, obviously, that are covering him. So what happens is there's just more space between the deepest man, Jordy Nelson, and the line of scrimmage. And the more space there is, the more openings there are for other people. So when you talk about taking the top off a defense, it's certainly, you know, with the intent of completing deep passes, sure, but it also just stretches the defense vertically. And the more stretched they are, the easier it is for other guys to have success. In Green Bay, that's been Randall Cobb with Jordy Nelson. So with him in there, you know, in theory, if he comes back the way he was, there's going to be so much more space for guys, you know, to operate underneath, whether it's Cobb, whether it's Richard Rodgers, whether it's Aberderis, whoever it may be. And we'll talk about, you know, this crowded bunch in a second. But my question is, will he be the same? And, of course, there's no answer to it. But based on what you just laid out, very rarely were guys at the age of 31 as effective as they had been prior. And Driver seems to be the exception.
Luke Getsy, basically the new wideout coach, basically said he'd be a fool to doubt that Jordy could would not be a really good player again. Jordy's beaten a lot of odds. He's got a great build, physique. He's got a great heart,
and he's not that fast. He has tremendous success with
deep. He plays to every second, every split second of that time in his pads, and he and Rodgers have a good thing, you know. So I don't really know about this hiccup. Let's go on.
Okay.
This
so
is silly.
It's obviously crowded behind him. You know, it's jam-packed with guys in there, whether it's Davante Adams, Randall Cobb, Ty Montgomery, Jeff Janis, Aberderis, Trevor Davis. You got a bunch of guys. There are some projections out there, early projections, that think the Packers might keep 7 wide receivers. Last year they kept 5. I don't know how many they'll keep, and we'll talk about that in later podcasts. But how do you sort of assess their depth 1 to 7 with those 7 guys?
I looked it up tonight, Mike. They kept 5 in 8 of the last 9 seasons.
And what did they keep in
one,
the 9?
6.
6, okay.
And McCarthy's first year, they kept 4.
Okay.
I mean, it's going to be 5.
You think so?
These guys aren't that good. I mean,
so who do you think is in danger of missing the
roster?
What
do we know about Montgomery's ankle? It can't be good.
Certainly not. He's been hurt an extremely long time with an injury that did not seem serious at the time, but for whatever reason has lingered tremendously.
I thought Davante Adams had a very poor morning his first day in practice, pads today. He couldn't separate. Every catch he was involved in was contested. He dropped the ball. He fumbled on a strip by Rollins. They had that deep play action pass, the ball that Rodgers always traditionally would throw to Jordy Nelson, and they gave Adams a shot, and he just went by the corner and then was
couldn't
the,
get close
the property
to being
of 42.
Burnett. Yeah, Burnett
it
had
was
him
just
covered. Yeah.
Morgan Burnett.
So I'll tell you, this is really going to have fans disappointed, but there were a lot of expectations on Janis coming into this camp, mm-hmm. given, you know, the way he sort of broke out in that playoff game. I think he's had a miserable camp so far. And I like the guy. I think he's incredibly nice. It would be an awesome story. I've been real disappointed with what he's done. He's
Let me say this, Mike. You know, there's 90 guys out there, mm-hmm. and I can't even hardly tell you in those 3 practices, I've hardly spent any time with Janis. I'm just looking elsewhere. So I don't know what you're talking about, really.
So with him, you know, he's had so many shots deep. You know, Hundley, there was one practice where Hundley must have gone deep to him 3 times, and Rodgers as well. And I think he's caught maybe one of them. It might even be 0. You know, he still struggles. You know, I just remember that game in Detroit. Remember they took that shot deep to him in Detroit, and he told you after the game that he kind of lost it in the lights a little bit, looking up. He seems to have trouble. Once he gets deep, he seems to have trouble locating the ball and then being athletic enough and coordinated enough, maybe that's the right word, coordinated, to jump and make the catch with a defender near him. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is when you put him next to Sam Shields or Demaryius Randall and those guys go up for the ball, they just look much more comfortable trying to catch it than Janis has early in this camp. And in terms of shorter routes, he really hasn't done much of anything. I was talking to Tom about it, you know, our colleague Tom Silverstein, on a video we made earlier today, and he said, to put it simply, he just needs to catch the ball. He hasn't caught anything. Hmm. So I think that's an area that could be a bit of concern. I'm going to disagree with you. I say they keep a minimum of 6. I really do. I don't think they're going to get rid of Montgomery because he played well when he was in there last year. I don't think they're going to risk cutting Trevor Davis because he's a draft pick.
And he's looked pretty good.
Yep. So if you have those 2, I think they're going to definitely keep Nelson and Cobb, so that's 4. I don't think they're going to give up on Davante, and I don't think they're going to lose Jeff Janis because of his special team abilities. That's 6.
So who's getting
to me, Aberderis is the odd man out, but he's looked good in camp too.
Okay.
So I don't really know.
All right. Let's move on.
All
right. We'll go to the tight ends where Richard Rodgers has slimmed down.
Yeah.
Jared Cook is still out with his foot at his foot.
And Mitchell Henry was out today, too.
Cramps.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Richard Rodgers, I was out there in May one day and June one day, and I thought his body looked good. He had trimmed down. I don't know what he's weighing right now. Do you?
They wanted him at 258, 258.
Okay. Is he there? Pretty close, I'll bet.
I think so, yeah.
He's a guy who can lose a lot of weight. He weighed 272 late last year. He's sleeker. Now, I don't know if it might even help him as a blocker. All that extra weight did not help him as a blocker. So this, he might even be better there. He can't get much worse. So have you thought he's looked all right, moved all right?
I thought he's looked pretty good, yeah. All right. He hasn't done anything spectacular, but I thought he's been solid.
Jared Cook, I don't know anything about him other than what scouts have told me, and he drops the ball a lot, and he's got talent.
I saw him for about 5 minutes, it felt like, during the off-season program, and then he was out. And when he comes back, we don't really know.
Backman, Perillo, Henry, and Pierce.
Perillo's impressed me.
Okay.
I thought Perillo's been pretty good so far in camp. He's made a couple nice over-the-shoulder catches down the middle. And, you know, he's not overly athletic. He's not overly fast. But the guy gets open, and he catches the ball.
All right, let's go to the old line. So they got three guys going to be UFAs. Sitton, Lang, and Bakhtiari. Plus, you got Treader and Barclay, also UFAs. Five guys looking to cash in. As one scout said, it's the way it should be. If they have a great year and they stay healthy and they win, they're all going to get paid. I think they're going to find a way to do it. But the odds of that, Lang's not healthy right now, is he, Mike?
He's not. He's dealing with some lingering issues relative to a shoulder surgery that he had in the off season. I remember you broke that story, Bob, late in the year. He said, you know, I gotta have it repaired. Do you remember exactly what he had to have? I don't either.
No.
But for whatever the issue was, he's been bothered by this a little bit. He said today that it was more precautionary than anything that he was on the PUP list. He feels like he could go out there and play if he needed to. You know, and that's something we'll hear from Corey Linsley as well when we come to him. But the medical staff is being more cautious than anything. I think the whole offensive line is ready by the start of the season.
Okay, Lane Taylor has replaced Lang the first 3 days at right guard, and J.C. Treader has replaced Linsley, who has a hamstring for the last 2.5 months.
Yeah.
I mean, they're being careful, but he screwed it up once trying to come back a little too early, not a few weeks ago, so it's not a great sign.
No, it's not a great sign. But in Treader, they have certainly a reliable backup.
Yes, they do. You know, this unit has a lot to prove, man. It's not just about money. It's about credibility and reputation and status. Last year at this time, I was talking about him, quoting people, asking him if it could be as good as that the glory years line in the early 60s or the Larry Bechtol line with Clifton and Tauscher and Flanagan and the two great guards, Wall and Rivera, in the early 2000s. Hey, this bunch, Packers gave up 49 sacks in 18 games. 34 were charged to the O-line last year compared to 16.5 the year before. That's more than twice as many sacks. The bad run total was 99 compared to 73.5 the year before. I'm not saying, obviously, they weren't all their fault. Richard Rodgers led the team with, I think, 16.5. But still, they didn't run block that good either. So this whole bunch, show me.
Agreed.
Yeah. Anybody else on the line you want to talk about, Mike?
Well, Josh Walker sort of experimented at this time last year with kicking out to tackle. He'd been a guard for, you know, his whole career, really. And they kind of liked him out there because, you know, he's big enough, you know, and he moves pretty well. But obviously, as people saw in that Arizona game, the first Arizona game, it was a disaster. And he's basically converted back to guard full-time now. So you have Lane Taylor and Josh Walker at guard. And let's talk about the young guys. You know, it's important right there with Spriggs and Murphy.
Spriggs completely left tackle. Murphy completely right tackle.
Yes.
And that's their natural positions. And, you know, it was, I mean, that's good to draft like that. I really haven't watched either one of them, I can't say.
Spriggs got beat by Julius Peppers today, but he won't be the first and won't be the last to say that. So now we move on to the quarterbacks. And, of course, this was a big area of contention throughout the season. Fans discussed it constantly. what was going on with Aaron Rodgers? You know, you had an interesting quote from Alex Van Pelt, the quarterback's coach. What did he say when you talked to him about the way 12 played last year?
Not up to his standards. Obviously, we've targeted improvement areas, and he's on board.
So what do you think? I mean, knowing him, knowing the competitor that he is, I got to think he comes back and plays well this season.
I agree.
Okay.
He didn't do it last year. He had some people hurt. So what? Every great quarterback has people hurt. Quarterback, this game is just a quarterback's game. Make it happen. Inspire people. Win a bunch of games. He won 10. Split in the playoffs. He had his worst year. Numbers, performance, couldn't hit a deep ball. I don't know. He's 32. He'll be 33 in December. Aaron said on that AJ Hawk podcast, he thinks he's playing, you know, my best football the last few years. Well, it wasn't his best football last year. And he's got to be accountable.
Do you think the knee was a factor at all?
No.
I don't either.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he ran so well, you know.
Yeah.
But he's got to stay in the pocket, take some shots, deliver the ball. He's got to trust that old line of his. I assume that old line is going to be quite a bit better. They had injuries last year. What was it? They played 73. The starters played 73% of the snaps, I think. But Rodgers, you know, he wants to be remembered as the greatest to ever play of the game. And he's got a long way to go to get to that. And he's embarking on a comeback year.
So how about what's behind him? You know, this is an important training camp for Brett Hundley. The extra game being in there, he's going to play far and away the most reps of any quarterback over the next month, 6 weeks, whatever the case may be. Through a couple days here, I thought he's been great.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
His poise at the line of scrimmage to me is really impressive. Like, he never seemed rattled last year when we saw him in camp, but I don't remember, and maybe it happened and I just wasn't paying attention since I was new and I was just trying to really absorb everything last year. But his hard count has been so good in this camp. Today, on one snap, he got Daniels and Matthews both to jump, two arguably the two best defensive players. Yesterday, he got three false start penalties. Neutral zone infractions, not false start penalties. And I just think he's throwing the ball well, too. I'm impressed with him.
Wow.
And I'm excited to see him again. He was fun to watch last year.
Yes, he was.
In camp.
Maybe, you know, your sixth wideout, I mean, they're only going to keep two QBs, obviously, so maybe that's where that comes from.
Yeah, yeah, and they're probably not going to keep two fullbacks this year.
No.
So there's another spot.
Right. You're right. Okay.
It's interesting.
All right, let's go to the RBs.
Okay, the running backs.
This
has been the whole summer, the whole offseason really has been, is Eddie Lacy in shape? Is Eddie going to be back to his old self? Well, he certainly looks physically like he's done, you know, a decent job. He's definitely more slender than he was. I don't know. Do you think he'll be effective?
Have you talked to him?
Sparingly.
Has he answered questions this camp?
Yeah.
I didn't even see that or anything.
I mean, he's talked about the weight, you know, really since May.
Yeah.
And he's kind of sick of it, and I don't blame him. You know, he did what he needed to do. He put in the work with the Tony Horton, the founder of P90X. He was in Jackson Hole. He was in California. He was in California a second time. So he's certainly trying. Will it translate onto the field? I bet yes.
Okay.
I think he bounces back.
He's playing for his financial future.
No doubt. That's a huge thing this year for him.
Maybe that doesn't mean anything to him.
He's
marches to
cat.
His own beat, man.
He's a different cat. There's no doubt about it.
You would think it would, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm interested to see Starks this year.
Why?
So he had the heaviest workload of his career last season. He played a lot. A lot, a lot, a lot. He was used in the running game. He was used in the screen game. He's north of 30, you know, sort of that unwritten magical barrier for running backs. I'm just kind of interested to see how his body responds, you know. He might come out of the gates hot, but I want to see in weeks 9, 10, 11, 12, is he still as spry as he was last season, or... Is the heavy workload for the first time since college really going to be a factor?
Hmm. Yeah. This is his seventh year, Mike.
I know.
It's a long time for a running back who's not a starter.
Yeah.
And
he was a free agent. The Packers brought him back.
Yeah.
And,
they did.
Okay. They wanted him here.
All right. John Crockett has been the number three, and he's impressed me just casually.
Agreed. And I think he's another guy, and I wrote this in a story that'll be, I think, in the paper tomorrow or Saturday. I think he's in that same category as Hundley, that this is going to be an important camp for him. I don't think Lacy and Starks are going to get a ton of carries. I looked at their numbers from last camp. I think Lacy had 18 carries and Starks had 13 over the whole camp. Hmm. Crockett led the group last year. Yeah. I think he's going to lead them again.
All right, so they lost Don Jackson here, one of their three rookie free agents. Jackson, I think he was their best one. He's from Nevada. They gave him a $5,000 signing bonus. What happened to this guy?
A hairline fracture in
the jaw?
Jaw, that's right, yeah.
How
jaw,
about that?
As reported by Tom Silverstein, our colleague.
So, I don't know. So he's gone. The depth is not really there. All right, now the fullback, Aaron Ripkowski, replacing John Kuhn.
He seems like he's doing all right. Nothing special.
He's not going to play much, but...
No. Let's move on.
He's younger. He runs better than Kuhn.
Well, that's true. Yeah, and he's a special teams core guy. He'll play special teams all year.
And he's a heavier blocker than Kuhn as well.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the D-line.
All right, the defensive line.
Are they thin there, Mike?
I think so. I've said that since the end of the season when, you look at Raji leaving, you look at Pinnell suspended, you look at Clark, Lowry, and who am I missing? Clark, Lowry, and Ringo as three guys that are going to need to contribute that have never played in a regular season game. To me, I think that's a little bit worrisome when you have three guys, at least one of which has to contribute significantly. And they haven't played in any games. Two of them coming from college. I don't know. I think they're a man short. Now, what did Coach Turgovac say?
He didn't think so, but he said, we'll see. Mike's been coaching this group for a long time. He knows his way around D-lines for 30 years, and he thinks they're okay. Now, I wrote about this guy for tomorrow's paper. The rookie free agent nose tackle, Demetrius Anderson from Central Florida. He had a good day, Mike.
Yes, he did. Today, obviously, with pads, we saw the one-on-one pass rush drill with the offensive lineman going head-to-head against the defensive lineman one-on-one, and he impressed me. I didn't know much about him. I still don't know much about him. I haven't read what you'll have in tomorrow's paper. But, boy, he looks good.
He beat Matt Rotherham twice. I talked to some guys in the locker room. He was stout in the half line drill, they said. He's 6'1 and a half, 318. Missed all of his senior year, torn ACL about a week before camp. Forgotten. The only team, not only wasn't he drafted or signed, the only team that gave him an invite to a minicamp tryout was Green Bay.
He's been the most impressive to me of the undrafted guys up front.
I mean, I expected more from Brian Price from Texas San Antonio. But he's a raw player, as you saw in some of the drill work. But I still think this guy could come on. He's 6'2 and a half, 3 1/4.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Fundamentally, I think he's got a long way to go. But the guy plays really with a little bit of a mean streak. I think he could do a little something.
Kenny Clark and Lowry, we'll just have to see, all right?
Yep.
It's a little early even to be discussing this, Mr. Cohen. It's against my better judgment, but the podcast must go on, right?
We have to give the people what they want.
Yeah, but they want insight, not just blabbing.
I disagree. I think they want us to blab. They enjoy hearing about your golf games.
In the old days, Mike, I wouldn't even discuss players for at least two exhibition games.
Bob, in the old days, you never did a podcast.
Tried to be informed back then, Mike. Not this instant analysis. All right, let's go to the LBs.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about inside. Mr. Barrington is still out with his foot injury, right?
Correct.
In his stead, we have Jake Ryan at strong inside and Martinez, the rookie, at weak inside, backed by Joe Thomas and Carl Bradford. How's it looking?
So, it's been Ryan and Martinez pretty much since the beginning of the offseason program. They threw Martinez right into the fire. They've had him in there in the base in the nickel defense. The coaches like his intelligence, they like his work ethic, and he's kind of a bookworm. He really studies the playbook. They like that. Jake Ryan, haven't seen anything great, haven't seen anything wrong. He's just kind of middle of the road to me so far. It's kind of tough to see, the linebackers and things and these half-line drills and stuff like that.
Thank you.
It's hard. Carl Bradford and Joe Thomas, again, sort of just run-of-the-mill. In terms of the outside guys, that's where it's kind of been interesting. For three straight days now, we've seen Nick Perry working with the starters, Julius Peppers working with the number two unit. Mike McCarthy says Nick Perry's going to have a bigger role. He obviously turned it on a little bit in the playoffs. When push comes to shove, do you think he sort of plays as a starter if healthy?
Well, the odds are he's going to be hurt. Peppers is never hurt, and Perry's been hurt a ton.
Perpetually,
every
yeah.
year. So the odds are he's going to be injured. So so often when we talk about position battles, injuries decide it.
No doubt.
It's just the way it is.
What do you make? Have you talked to scouts at all about this Laurenti McRae?
Yeah.
What do they think he is, or what is he going to be?
Hard-working kid who loves the game.
Okay.
He's small. He only ran 4.8 flat 4 years ago out of FSU, Florida State. He missed almost the whole offseason with some injury.
Why do you think Ted was interested in him? He's got special teams ability. He played a ton of special team snaps in Denver. But he doesn't, I don't know. They have a decent amount of depth at outside linebacker, especially after they converted Dayton Jones. And I don't really know where he fits in.
He had one interesting rush today in the one-on-ones.
Did he?
Did you see it?
No.
It was kind of like a fake spin delay. There was some oohs and ahs over there from his teammates as well as some fans.
Really?
I was a long ways away. It was a very different. I'd love to see the tape of that thing. We're 60 yards away. It looked pretty cool.
Okay.
So I want to see more.
Fake spin delay. Did you just make that up?
It was weird.
There's no way anyone has ever said that before. You just made it up.
All right. Dayton Jones. He's playing linebacker all the way.
I mean, he is. He's another interesting one. Now, you know, our colleague Tom Silverstein had a really good story maybe about 2 weeks ago leading into camp about how the body type of these outside linebackers has changed, you know, dramatically for the Packers. I mean, you've gone from the Packers thinking guys like Carl Bradford, who are undersized, can rush the passer, to converting Dayton Jones, who is, you know, a mammoth man, closest in size to Julius Peppers among that bunch. When I watch Dayton in the 11-on-11s or the half-line drill, I don't think he has the speed to get to the passer off the edge. At least for the first couple days, you know, he can, even when he gets a good start, he just doesn't seem to get there fast enough.
Okay.
So to me, that indicates that the reason they want him there is to be stout against the run. Nick Perry's good against the run, right?
Yeah, I would say.
So maybe that's kind of what they're looking for. You know, use Matthews to let him pin his ears back and go, and rotate in some of those other guys to stop the run and do more of the beefy work. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't think he's quick enough to get there.
Kyler Fackrell's going to make the team. He's a third-round pick.
Yeah.
Jayron Elliott's on the bubble. There's a lot of people here.
Now, what Jayron has going for him is that he is another of those core special teams guys. Zook loves him on special teams, and he's going to have to do a lot of work there. And as you mentioned in previous podcasts, he started out strong on special teams and faded throughout the year last year. So he's got to do something there, or he's really got to impress on the edge. Otherwise, I think you're right. I think he's on the bubble.
Yeah. All right, that's the LBs.
Okay, what's next?
Next is the DBs.
All right.
We're going to stay with the only order that a sports writer can use, Mike. Okay.
Whatever you say, Bob. I'm just here.
So this could be a heck of a group, Mike.
I agree.
Very upbeat. You got Denver and Seattle. They're the top two. They're the teams to beat. Minnesota's really got a good group, especially if Griffin comes through, the new safety from Tennessee. But Green Bay's pretty solid. They got a lot of people. You got three good players in Shields, Clinton Dix, and Burnett. Demarius Randall, or Quentin Rollins, has to be a good starter and has to be a good nickel. There's depth at safety. There's some players, other players at corner. How do you see this secondary?
So this is another interesting one because we've seen a little bit of a shakeup from what I think a lot of people expected. Going into training camp, I think there were a lot of people, myself included, that would have put Shields on one side, Randall on the other, and then Quentin Rollins in the slot, the position occupied most recently by Casey Hayward, who left as a free agent and went to the Chargers, correct?
Right.
So I thought that's what we would see, and I was wrong. We've seen that at certain times, for sure. That alignment has been there, you know, for bits and pieces. But we've seen a lot of Demarius Randall inside in the slot, what Joe Witt calls that star position. And Rollins has been outside, and I'll tell you, Rollins has looked really, really good. Not to say Randall hasn't, but I think Rollins has come out strong. What do you think?
I hate to draw. I can't say I've really watched Rollins. I have kind of taken a look at Randall, and he hasn't been all that impressive.
Were you surprised to see him inside?
No, because Witt said in May or something that all three of those guys can play inside as well. So, all right, now Ladarius Gunter, he's number four.
Yep.
He made three big plays today in pads, Mike. He sifted through for a minus three on kind of a run.
Yeah, that
run
was a
blitz.
Nice play. Really drew some applause.
He made a stealthy interior blitz and got to the quarterback, Hundley, I believe.
I missed that one.
And then he closed in the flat really quick on John Crockett.
I saw that.
I think he busted that play up.
He did not look as good in shorts and helmets the last couple of days. But he's one of those guys, he loves the physical play. You know, that was his mm-hmm. MO last year, was using his long arms to jam you in the chest plate and just kind of go with it. So he's a guy I think that would naturally look better in pads than he probably would in T-shirts and shorts.
Roberts and Daniels, a great-looking physical specimen. We'll have to see on him. Little Mac Dorland from Northern Iowa.
But what do you think of Goodson?
Oh,
he's got that suspension, four games.
Yeah,
he's
sure
been
does.
A core special teamer for his whole career.
Witt keeps saying he likes what he does in practice, but he's got to do it when the lights come on under pressure, playing the ball. So I don't really know.
Heck of a guy, though.
Yeah. Dorland is a good free agent. Bryce Popp, the former great Packer pass rusher and NFL Defensive Player of the Year for the Buffalo Bills. He was at camp the other day, and he's D-line coach at Northern Iowa, and he was talking about Dorland. Really likes this guy. He ran 4.39. Bright-eyed kid, smart. He's got a chance.
How about in the back half of the secondary? You know, we saw toward the second half of last season that pairing of Morgan Burnett and HaHa Clinton Dix really, really ascended to a stellar level of play, and in large part that was due to Clinton Dix taking a significant step after a rookie season that, as you told me, was up and down, correct?
Oh, definitely, yeah. You know, in the last 20 years, I said the best safety combinations were Leroy Butler with Eugene Robinson in 96 and 97, the two Super Bowl years, and then Butler with Sharper when Sharper became a player in the year 2000, Sharper's first great year. I said those are the best combinations. And Burnett and Dix would have a chance to get in there with those two other groups.
Depth behind him with Chris Banjo, who's just sort of a reliable guy there, and Micah Hyde, sort of that hybrid, you know, dime nickel guy and safety as well.
Yeah. Versatile, special teams impact.
Kentrell
Bryce, I'll mention, Mike, he's got a chance. Yeah. The kid from Louisiana Tech, a real tester, 4.43 on the 40, a 42-inch vert, and an 11.3 broad jump. Man, that's fantastic numbers. That would put him almost number one in the combine in all three categories at safety. This guy's got a chance.
I think so, yep. How many corners do they keep usually? I can't even remember.
Six? Five or six.
Okay.
We got a player from the Milwaukee area, Marwin
Evans. Oh, that's
Evans.
Right. Forgot about Marwin, yep.
Safety from Utah State. He played with Kyler Fackrell there. Oak Creek. Time at a couple junior colleges. And then he really got a chance here when he had a pro day. 4.47 and a 42 vert. So that's how Marwin got into this camp. And so we'll be following him from Oak Creek.
What's next?
Let's go to the specialists.
Okay.
Mike, Rick Goslin of the Dallas Morning News has been doing his special team breakdowns, rankings for 31 years. Why have the Packers never been better than fourth? Are you kidding me? So I pose that question. Well, one scout has talked about this to me over the years. He said, Bob, it's not a priority. You got Favre and Rodgers, you're going to score a ton of points. You don't have to worry about special teams. I think there's truth to that. Mason Crosby talked about injuries. I poo-pooed that. I said, Mason, everybody's got injuries. Then he talked about the weather, and he's definitely right on. After November, the kicking and punting stuff is hurt, no question. So they were 17th last year after being 32nd the year before. Is that as high as Ron Zook's going to go with McCarthy? McCarthy, for 10 years, his average rank, 30th. Indianapolis was worse, and Carolina was worse. His teams have been terrible. Now, is Zook the answer? Zook did a solid job. He called it decent sure. the first year.
Yep.
His big emphasis this year, punt return. He's got to get Micah Hyde
going. Yeah, that was brutal last year. Brutal.
He thinks Trevor Davis could have a shot. So we'll see. He thinks he catches punts comfortably. He only returned 8 punts in his college career. So that's the return game. We got a lot. They got a lot of kickoff returners.
Yeah, plenty of options.
All right. The long snapper is going to be Lovato unless he can handle what, Mike?
Yeah, I talked to him today for a little while in the locker room. And, you know, he was sort of thrown into the fire immediately last year, you know, after the injury to Brett Goode. And because of that, he didn't learn the system the way that a player would typically learn it if they started, you know, in July. They basically had to, and I don't mean this at all in an intelligent way because, you know, Rick is a smart guy, but they had to dumb it down for the sake of time. They had to make things as simple as possible just to make sure he could get on the field and be there because Brett Goode had the torn ACL. So he was telling me today about how this particular offseason was interesting for him because he could actually learn the schemes the way they're supposed to be learned. Start to finish, and he worked on his footwork, things of that nature. So, you know, he's had a little bit of trouble the first couple days. Zook has been on him talking about, you know, positioning the ball or moving it slightly. That's giving people some problems, you know, vision-wise. He's shifting it a little bit in ways that he can't do it and causing guys to jump, things of that nature. But, you know, he said he's felt much more comfortable in terms of knowing where he's supposed to go for blocking, mm-hmm. knowing the schemes, how to move. And, you know, I think in a couple of weeks he'll be fine.
So Brett Goode is about 7 months removed from ACL surgery, probably down in Arkansas at his home.
7 months? Is that all?
Yeah. I think the surgery was December 28th or something.
He's been snapping for a while. He's been snapping for about 2 months at least.
Okay, but you got to run and cut and block. Sure. So he's not ready. He's an older guy. He may not be ready for 12 months.
Could be.
10 to 12. I mean, so they need Lovato.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do.
No doubt about it.
All right, the kicker, Crosby.
Steady.
Yep. The punting situation. Maste against Green Bay free agent Peter Mortel.
Yeah.
I'll talk about Mortel. You talk about Maste.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, Mortel. Played at Green Bay Notre Dame High School, the first Green Bay High School product to sign with the Packers since wide receiver Chris Samp, S-A-M-P, of Green Bay Preble in 2005. Martell's grandpa, Jerry, an insurance executive in town, was the timekeeper, the official timer at Lambeau Field, I'll bet for 20 years. His dad, Gerald, replaced his father, Jerry, and he has been the timekeeper for, I'll bet, 10 to 12 to 15. So that's what Peter has. Peter told me yesterday that he was in the fifth grade when his grandpa, who passed away a few years ago, saw him punting, and he said, you know, Peter, with your leg, you got a chance someday to punt over there. And the kid took it to heart, and he never forgot it. Played at Minnesota for 4 years. And away you go, and here he is. So there's a lot of pressure on him, but there's opportunity as well, right, Mike?
Yeah, there's definitely opportunity because Tim Maste, for as long as he's been here, has never been an elite punter. You know, not really even in that upper echelon, I would say, of guys around the league. But he made improvements last year. He definitely, you know, Tim is a guy, for those of you who don't, you don't have a chance to talk to him the way that we do in the locker room, obviously. He is an extremely, extremely thoughtful person. And what I mean by that is he analyzes everything constantly about himself. You know, he's almost overthinking. We've heard Ron Zook a couple times say, Tim, you got to stop thinking and just kick the ball. Because Ron thinks that when he kicks it, he's certainly got the leg and, you know, the ability and all that. Tim was a tremendous high school athlete. All-state in multiple sports, I believe. Played basketball, baseball, soccer, football, obviously. He was a terrific, terrific athlete. The problem is just the mental side of things. Now, he set the franchise record for net punting last season, but he had a number of shanks. He was asked to directionally kick. His hang time went down again, as you noted in your story. I don't know. I mean, if you ask me right now, I think he makes the team, and I don't even think it's really that close. I don't think Martell's gonna push him that much. But I think Maste's just a run-of-the-mill punter.
He's Crosby's holder.
Oh, yes. And in that regard, he's terrific. He's a great holder.
He had one snafu 2 years ago. He had a bad bobble. All right, so I just want to repeat this quote, okay, from an NFL special teams coach who played the Packers last year, and he's been in the league, all right? So I asked him about Maste. This was in April we talked. And he said he was just a little up and down last season, but it's such a hard place to kick. You've got to take that into consideration. From knowing the kid, I love the guy's demeanor. Now he's talking about Maste. Because he doesn't get all freaked out about it. That's worth something. Those kind of guys, you don't miss them until they're gone. Quite a quote, huh?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So Martell's, he's in the right place. I mean, they're looking to improve this position one way or another. He's in the right spot. Now he's got to do it, period. And he's got to really outperform, win by a heck of a decision to win the job.
I'll take Maste. I think he's going to win it.
Okay. Okay, Mike, that takes care of the special teams.
All right, and now we've arrived at the portion of the show where we'll take a few questions from the readers and listeners. We got a lot of them, so we thank you guys for sending those along. This question comes from Oddball, and Oddball asks, regardless of Jordy Nelson's status, will we see Jared Cook and Richard Rodgers on the field together much this season? I think yes, if Jared Cook is healthy. During OTAs, before Jared Cook had the foot injury that ultimately shut him down, there was a decent amount of time spent by the offense working with two tight ends on the field at the same time. I think they weren't able to do that a lot last year because Andrew Corliss was hurt and also was not really playing very well. I think they do try and go to that a little bit this year if Jared Cook is healthy.
Is Andrew Corliss going to get a job, Mike?
I don't think so.
Really?
Is he in camp anywhere?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
He's not that bad.
I don't think he'll get a job.
Because of the thing that happened on July 4th?
I don't know. I mean, maybe just because, you know, he's got the knee problem. He hasn't been that productive in Green Bay.
I like the guy personally.
Okay.
All right.
All right. This question comes from Joel Nelson. Joel wants to know, who are the standout players on defense and offense since camp began? Bob, is there one guy that has jumped out to you?
Mike, I'm just going to throw some anonymous person at you. I'm going to go to the fullback from Newberry, Mr. Alstavis Squirewell. He's 260. He played D-line in college. I kind of like him. He's not that slow. His 40 time was 4.98. He plays a little quicker than that. He's a brutish size. I kind of like him.
He's got really good hands.
Does he?
I've watched him on the jug machine the last couple days. And he looks more comfortable catching the ball than some of these UDFA running backs. I mean, like, you know, it sticks. There's no bobble. He wants it the highest speed coming out of the jug machine. I think he's got good hands.
Mike, you're working this year.
I'm trying.
I'm impressed. You're killing it.
I'm trying.
I got to shape up here, man.
All right, let's think of one other that impressed me.
On the D.
You know, this is kind of a cop-out answer, but I've kind of been impressed with Kenny Clark. And, you know, first-round pick coming out of UCLA, a lot expected of him. You know, I thought he was a little undersized when I look at him, you know, and I still think he is a little undersized just in terms of his height. He looks a little short, but, you know, his strength has been impressive. And in those one-on-ones today, he did some things, and I think he's looked okay. I think he's looked pretty good. All right. Another question. This comes from King Rusty. If Perry and Peppers both stay healthy, who ends up with more snaps between the two? I would say Perry.
He's going to get hurt, Mike.
If he stays healthy.
But he's not. But if he does.
Bob, can you play along for the sake of the people?
Sorry.
I say apologize. Perry. I say Perry.
I say Pep.
Okay.
All right.
Any other questions here? Last one. This one's quick. How has Boniquez Brown looked so far? Boniquez Brown is one of those undrafted guys at the inside backer position. He's been fifth best, you know, at minimum. You've got Jake Ryan and Blake Martinez as the top two. Then you've had Joe Thomas with Carl Bradford. And don't forget, when Barrington comes back, he'd be ahead of those guys too. So Boniquez Brown is minimum fifth, could even be sixth, although Manoah Pakula came off injured today, pulled a hammy, I think. So
I really want to see Boniquez Brown.
Yeah.
I don't even think I've laid eyes on him more than like for a fleeting second. I want to starting Saturday morning.
Bright and early. Our last morning practice.
Yes.
Thank God.
Ooh, it was hot. It was breathless a couple days this week, huh, Mike?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Nice weather today. Gray and 72.
I liked it. Well, once again, we have overstayed our welcome. We've approached an hour here on the very first podcast. We thank you for listening. And Bob, what are we gonna hear on the way out? Just remind the good people.
Mr. John Anderson, Black Sheep, 1983.
All right.
Take it away, Johnny.
Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon.
Big brother, little brother, and sister too. None of them turned out half bad. Except me. I'm the black sheep of the family. Big brother went to college and became a doctor, man. I guess he makes about a...
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.